Hello everyone and welcome to Event Talks, a podcast powered by Hubilo, where we discuss events, event ideas, trends, technology, basically everything and anything related to events with the best of industry experts. I am Juhi Purswani, your host for the day. Today, we have another veteran events industry expert joining us straight from Portland, Oregon, United States, Elizabeth Glau. Hi Elizabeth, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So I would like to start by giving a brief introduction about Elizabeth. She has been recognized as 40 under 40 in 2017 by Connect Association. Her work in the field of engagement technology has been featured in publications ranging from the Meetings Professional to the San Diego Union Tribune. Elizabeth is an advocate for integrity within the events industry and for the workforce across all the industries. She is an international speaker and regularly speaks at PCMA, Convention Industry Council, C-Systems, and many others. Elizabeth has also co-hosted a podcast called Making a Marketer. So did I miss anything here, Miss Elizabeth?
No, that's great. Thanks for the introduction.
So today we are going to get as much knowledge about event engagement, experience design, and event integrity in current times. So let's begin.
Sounds great.
So you have always been a believer that technology is just a tool you need to get things done, which we also believe is true as we work in the event tech company and we guarantee ease and efficacy. But mind and strategy are still a part of the job that people do. So my first question to you is, if you can help me create a distinction as to where these event professionals can use the technologies as a tool and where they need to take an active role while planning for an online event engagement and experience.
Yeah, I'd love to dive into this topic. So I think that a lot of times when we think about event technology, typically it is focused on the attendee experience. Mm-hmm. But you know, just as a reminder for folks that technology can also make planners more efficient by automating repetitive tasks and leveraging data. So we've, you know, there's kind of two, I think, pretty distinct buckets between the technology that planners use to just help them to help their attendees get the job done that they're at your event to get done. So online events are all technology, right? Like, you know, even how we're delivering them, you know, is on a technology platform. But the rules of engagement, they still apply just like they would in a physical environment. Yeah. So in a physical environment, let's say your attendees are, you know, just sitting in a ballroom, staring at a stage, and they're being talked to. So in an online environment, you know, your attendees are doing the same thing that they would be doing in a ballroom. They're just sitting in a chair, staring at their screen, just like they would be sitting in a ballroom, staring at a stage. So the same goes for, you know, other types of experiences online. We like to talk about the idea that physical experiences are automatically more engaging, but I don't think that they are. I think that they have to be designed to be more engaging and interactive. And I think you can do those whether you're in a physical environment or whether you're in an online environment. And the bonus I think that the online experiences have is you have a better chance at actually exceeding your attendees' goals and objectives if you know what they are, right, to begin with. Yeah. And then you use that technology to automate those tasks and leverage that data.
Yeah, that perfectly makes sense. Because, yeah, in online events, I guess we get more upper hand in leveraging the tool as to who exactly we should approach, and we know their profiles. We can study those people from beforehand, who is coming to the events and how we should interact and how we should go ahead with that.
Yeah, exactly. And let's just be realistic about what attendees actually use the technologies for, right? Mm-hmm. So we've had mobile apps for events for a while now. Yes. And in the beginning, they were important because websites were not mobile optimized. And so that's why we needed native apps that people would download on their phone when they attended an event in person. And yeah, they could use those tools to see who else is there, you know, find who they should talk to, find what sessions they're, you know, that they should go to. But the reality is I was seeing fewer and fewer attendees actually use the tool, right? And again, because it goes back to like the technology is just a tool to help them get that job done, right? And if, you know, if they can figure out a different way of doing it, or if they just decide that it's, you know, it's too much effort, it's too clunky for whatever reason for them to do it, they're just going to fall back to like, what is the easiest path for me to achieve that same goal or objective? And so I think that that's, you know, versus in the online space, it's, they're automatic, like they have to be on the platform, right? So whatever that, you know, technology you're using to deliver the content and connect your attendees, they have to be on it. Now, granted, they still, you know, choose whether or not to proactively network and, you know, do some of those things. But the difference is like, it's, they're there, right? They can't not be there, right? Like, and they can't not be, you know, kind of more present and paying attention to it, I guess.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So jumping on to my next question. What would you recommend to the enterprises who do a lot of heavy event marketing or retreats and other events in general with regards to their plans for 2021? So like, how should they adapt or plan or change anything, if at all, like in the current times we are facing this pandemic?
Yeah, and this has been the most interesting thing about, you know, about COVID-19, right? And this pandemic that we're in is, you know, I think our industry has, you know, really been behind in a lot of ways. And we've always talked about that, right? We always, you know, we say that. But if you had not adopted a digital first mindset before COVID, then now's the time to do it, right? So, you know, again, the data that we're able to generate by tracking customer interactions with us online is so much more valuable than the data that most of us actually generate from a physical experience. And that goes partially back to what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
It's not so much that the technology doesn't exist, right? It's just whether or not you're choosing the right tool, that you're choosing a tool that relies on your participants to, you know, allow you to track them, and they have to participate, like they have to use the app and, you know, say which sessions they went to and, you know, kind of like use that for networking. You're relying on them to do that. And that's, you know, realistically, you're just not going to get a high percentage of folks that will do that in a physical experience. You know, so whereas in a digital experience, an online experience, it's just easier to track, you know, what people are doing in that environment. And so, of course, physical events are, you know, they may still be an important part of your overall, you know, the strategy, right? The experience that you're trying to create with your customers, but the events need to be better integrated so that that data is flowing throughout, right? So, you know, if you've got a physical event, you know, to whatever extent that you can, extract that, that data on your customers and what they're doing and connect that with all of your other campaigns and everything else that you're doing, so that it becomes, you know, a year-long process, not oh, we're having an event and so we've got some, you know, digital campaigns leading up to it and that's where it ends, right? The event needs to be part of the bigger strategy, not the end-all be-all thing.
Yeah, that's true. There should be a data-oriented goal always for any event that planners are that organizers are going to plan.
Yeah, exactly.
So my next question has two subparts. So the question goes like this. Should virtual events stay for a long time ahead? What can an event management company that is into events productions and experience design do to be in the game? So the first subpart of this question is, any tips that you would like to give to the young event planners or EMCs about gaining back some of the lost business?
Yeah. So, so yeah. So first, you know, talking about just, you know, getting back, you know, getting back to work. I think that I'm, I mean, I guess little side note, I'm a little concerned about us trying to get events back right now, because I think that when, you know, COVID-19 was spreading initially, mm-hmm. it was pretty clear that it was travel and gathering people in large groups that really helped it, gave the disease its efficiency, right? In spreading, you know, quickly to a lot of people and all over the world, right? You know, I think it might've been Skift had an article about, you know, travel, you know, are we going to recognize that, you know, like that travel is, you know, I guess the way I commented on it is it's travel is our greatest strength, right? It's what, you know, helps connect the world in addition to technology. Yeah, but it can also be our weakness, right? Because this mm-hmm. is, you know, we are so connected that like, this is what ends up happening, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, just as a side note, I'm very conscious that, you know, folks mm-hmm. need to get their jobs back. They need to get, you know, business back, but I'm a little worried that we're rushing into this and it's going to make, you know, the industry look unprofessional and look like we don't actually care about not only our attendees, but, you know, the larger community. But if we're looking, you know, if we're looking to the future, right, at whatever point, I mean, it is what it is, right? Yeah. People are going to do what, you know, what they're going to do. So, what I like to look at for more of a long-term strategy is I think that the talent that it takes to design an experience can be utilized in any medium, right? So mm-hmm. I would actually recommend, so if you're a young event planner, or, you know, have this kind of company and really the thing that you are most passionate about is that experience design.
Yeah.
I would recommend learning about a concept called design thinking, or it's otherwise known as human-centered design. Okay. And typically those terms are used in the technology industry. So like technology companies use the, you know, it's really more, you know, startup technology companies that use these concepts. Mm-hmm. Another one that I like is called service delivery. And when I, you know, when I discovered service delivery last year, I was diving into these topics last year when I was on my sabbatical. Oh. And the thing that was hilarious to me about service delivery is it's really, you know, at its core, the people that have worked in service mm-hmm. businesses like hospitality,
yeah.
it should be kind of common sense for them, right? You know, service mm-hmm. delivery is just a way of saying, you know, this is our entire business is like, should be seen as a service. So where it's become kind of a groundbreaking thing, if you will, is technology companies and other companies who typically thought of themselves as a product company mm-hmm. are starting to make this shift into thinking about their company as a service, right? Like yeah. everything you do is you're providing a service, yeah, right? Even though you think there's like a product involved, like mm-hmm. literally it's all about that service. So
yeah.
I would recommend, you know, if you've got still some time, you know, before, you know, some time to dig into some of these topics and learn about some things, you know, before you jump back in, I think having these kinds of skills mm-hmm. and knowledge about what certain segments refer to as these, you know, kinds of concepts and topics would be amazing for you to bring to your clients, you know, once the industry really does, you know, start coming back. So these principles will feel familiar to you, but really the trick is just getting comfortable talking about them within the frameworks of how people outside of the events industry talk about them. Mm-hmm. And you might even find like a local meetup group or, you know, even that's potentially they're meeting online right now, right? So you could find meetup groups literally anywhere
yeah.
who are, you know, talking about these subjects and that's the other beauty about virtual is right now, you know, you can find just a ton of different topics and people talking about different kinds of subjects and, you know, become an expert in these circles on experience design, right? So then you're the person to go to when somebody wants to talk about experience design, whether it's online or offline.
Yeah. That was really very insightful about service delivery and human-centric thinking. I would really like to dive into these topics later on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. It's, I mean, and to your kind of the general question, I think that you know, if you've spent your career in that physical event, mm-hmm. you know, experience design, mm-hmm. I think we should just and who knows, right? I don't have a crystal ball any more than anybody else does, yeah. right? But I do pay attention to a lot of different types of people and a lot of different, you know, segments and sectors. And I think virtual events will actually be here for a long time because yeah. attendees no longer assume that they have to leave their homes and offices for multiple days and go through the hassle of travel in order to have an experience. You know, I think that, you know, they realize that they have, you know, like we were just talking about, they have far greater access to a diverse range of people and ideas now that these events are online and they've democratized the sharing of knowledge.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I also like foresee reading the reports that Event MB and many other companies are like bringing us online. Even in 2021, it's people would like to go for virtual events rather than physical events just for safety and for the amount of knowledge that they have been getting around in this period of time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So my recommendation for folks who are, you know, if you've spent your life in that, you know, physical event experience design kind of arena, I think the way to move your business forward and to make your company more marketable in the future is, again, learn, like right now, learn how data is, you know, can be shared between those online and offline experiences and campaigns, like how all of that gets integrated. And I think, you know, providing the logistics for an event or project management, kind of, you know, yeah. just for the execution of those physical pieces may or may not be as much of a need in the future. I don't know, right? Like, you know, we'll see. So I, you know, my recommendation is just to move yourself into a position where you can speak to your clients about that strategy, you know, that data strategy and that and the most important part of that means knowing when to say that a physical event isn't the best solution yeah. or even an online event isn't the best solution, right? Know enough about all of this, the same, like all the goals and objectives that your client is trying to achieve. Know enough about what the alternatives are so that you're positioned yourself in a place to say, you know what, I don't think an event is the best solution for what we're trying to achieve here, right? I think it's a different type of campaign or a different type of, you know, different way to connect with our stakeholders and connect them with each other or whatever, right? It depends on what the goal and objective is. But that's where, you know, we've gotten used to just thinking that an event is just a thing and it's the end all be all solution. And we've unfortunately just put ourselves into this small bubble where that's all that we do. And we need to, you know, expand beyond that.
Yeah, very true. So the next subpoint of my question was, what all changes or updates would you want these EMCs to bring in their contracts to safeguard their team and their existence?
So are you talking more about like how do they protect their team in this environment where we've got the virus, or is it more about just like getting people back to work?
More about this virus. I'm referring to how they should keep their employees and contractors safe during the physical event. Yeah.
So and this is the other, you know, tricky part for me right now is talking about bringing these events back now. I think that certainly you can have your staff can be, you know, wearing masks and, you know, but they can't really be staying away from the actual attendees, right? Because they're serving them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had come across some research that was done on frontline hospitality folks from before COVID. And it was talking about, you know, how burnt out they are because, you know, their jobs are very, you know, tedious and they're dealing with angry people all the time and they're not paid that much, you know, to do these jobs. Right. And this is, what's funny was the research was done in China, but because I've worked in hospitality, I completely understand that that's true everywhere, right? Like that's the same, you know, that's the same situation in hospitality or any, you know, any kind of those like service industry jobs. They don't pay well and, you know, they're difficult jobs to have. I think to a degree that would include, you know, the folks that we hire as our temp staff or contract workers, who are the front lines, you know, of our event, of our events, right? Yeah. So that responsibility is ours too. It's not just the hotels, mm-hmm. but you know, so that was all reality before COVID, right? And now we have this, you know, this scenario where we're bringing events back to these physical environments. These folks are, you know, already burnt out and not being paid enough and used to getting yelled at. And now they're going to be, you know, yelled at by your attendees if you try to hold to a policy that, like, say everybody needs to wear a mask, right? We've seen in the US anyway, you know, maybe this is going better in other places, but you know, in the US it's like, you know, your attendees might end up, you know, yelling at your staff for whatever, right? I mean, people are very frustrated right now. You know, tensions are very high around a lot of issues. Yeah. And so, you know, it's just not, you know, I think the rest of the year is just going to be, you know, more of the same. It, you know, there's just going to be a lot of it. And who knows, right, how long this kind of, you know, attitude of tensions and, you know, frustration is going to last. But so I think, you know, in protecting your people, you know, there's physical protection, right? So it's like I said, you know, having them wear masks or whatever, but they can't stay away from the people that they're serving. So, you know, hopefully the mask, you know, is it, but are you able to pay them enough to, you know, to be essentially working in a position that, you know, is putting them in danger, right? Like, is that trade-off going to be enough where they're, you know, going to be dealing with, you know, folks, the attendees, the, you know, hotel guests, whatever it is, that are even more frustrated than usual, right? Like, you know, they usually, you know, treat them like crap anyway, right? And it's like, you know, people are going to be even meaner to them, you know, than they usually are. And so I think it's not even like, it's partially keeping them safe, but like, what about their, you know, what about their mental health as well? Like, are you able to contract, you know, are you able to get paid enough by your client? Let's say if you're talking about, you know, an agency, mm-hmm. are you able to get paid enough by your client to then, you know, pay your people who are working for you enough, you know, for it to be worth that, you know, and without taking advantage of the fact that they haven't been working for 3 months and, you know, they need the money, right? Like, let's, you know, if moving to that point, you know, moving to a place where we are respecting everyone and treating everybody, you know, all of our stakeholders like they're humans and not just taking advantage of them. Like, that's, you know, that's one of my goals.
Yeah. It is rightly said, safety is a lock and you are the key to it. So yeah, keeping, safeguarding your employees is very much important right now. And mm-hmm. you can't even risk it during this pandemic. No one should.
Yeah. It's a crazy time, you know, for sure, for that reason. Yes.
So my next set of questions is around the topic event integrity. So my first question on this is, what exactly is event integrity and how did this idea come to your mind?
Yeah, so event integrity actually has been around for a few years. My friend Crystal Heskey was the founder, and her original vision was to create a place where events could find vendors who would not take advantage of them. So in the case of, and I don't know, again, I don't know if this is more a thing that happens in the US and not in other countries, but you know, in the US you might, let's say you're a bride having a wedding, right? And you hire a DJ. Well, the DJ takes a deposit, right, in advance. And then in some cases they would just disappear with your money. And so her original vision was to create a marketplace where folks who were hosting events could find vendors who were actually trustworthy. Yeah. She had some background, a unique background in order to, that helped her discover this, you know, more of the financial data on companies and, you know, whether they were actually legit and things like that. So late last year and early this year, so she and I have been friends for a while, and I had been informally advising her on this journey that she was going through. And then late last year, kind of the beginning of this year, she had decided that she was ready to move on to something different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when COVID started, and I really started thinking about how I think the industry could be better. and, you know, do business in a different way. I thought, you know, I was ready to take that over from her and think about how the Event Integrity brand and that marketplace that she, you know, had just been ready to launch could actually be used to create a different type of system that connects the companies that are hosting events with the companies that are, you know, supplying all those services. And then, you know, the companies that are supplying all those services help them connect to those temp staff and contract workers, you know, the gig workers that we were just talking about. So that's, I've kind of taken what she's built and taking a slightly different direction with it, but it's still, you know, at the end of the day, it's about transparency, right? The mission is to make transparency more commonplace.
Yeah. It's great to learn about Event Integrity, and truly it works differently, as it is focused on highlighting and rewarding only those that I guess hold high standards of professionalism and ethics in the events industry.
Yeah, so that's where I've shifted it a little bit. So yeah, for her it was, you know, who are the vendors I can trust?
Yeah.
And the direction that I'm taking with it is who are the vendors who share my company's values, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're, you know, if you're working for JP Morgan Chase, right, your CEO has publicly stated since last year, right, this is a pre-COVID thing, right? This is something we're slowly making this move to companies understanding what their role is in society. Right, companies are starting to take responsibility for their role in climate change and, you know, their role in making our, you know, society, like societies more, you know, more equitable.
Yeah.
And so kind of leveraging that, so saying like, so say you work for JP Morgan Chase and your, you know, your role is to produce some kind of event. Mm-hmm. So how do you actually make a difference? How do you help your company then, you know, JP Morgan Chase, how do you help them live up to those values, right? That your CEO has publicly stated. Well, without a platform that makes it easy for you to show what the companies are in the events industry who also share those values and who have actually proven that they share those values in their actions. That's the direction that we're taking Event Integrity now, is building that platform to show which companies actually are doing their part, you know, as far as climate change and, you know, paying their employees, their full-time, part-time and temp employees, a living wage, you know, and more, you know, just raising the value of the money that goes to, again, those folks on the bottom, the front line, right? Like they're the ones, you know, that have the most stressful jobs. So they should be getting paid for it.
Yeah, that is true. That is really amazing to know. So jumping on to our next question, event coordination is one of the most top five stressful jobs in the world as we know it. And so how can this status quo improve? What roles do each and every stakeholder needs to play in this improvement?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, we love talking about this, right? We have the, you know, the one of the most stressful jobs in the world. And, you know, somebody, I don't remember where, I wish I could, you know, quote who was actually talking about it in this way, but I think so for those, you know, those listeners who don't know, you know, in the US at least, I don't know, you know, if it's like this everywhere, but it's literally, you know, meeting planning or event coordination is in the top five with like police officers and firefighters, right? And these kinds of jobs. And I think maybe airline pilot was one of them. I can't remember what the other four are total, but the difference for like, let's say you're talking about a police officer or a firefighter, those folks have definitely a high level of stress, but in a very short window, right? Like their jobs are not stressful, you know, day to day necessarily. It's when something goes wrong, right? So when they're answering a call and they're going to a fire, let's say, right? Like, yeah, it's super stressful, right? And it is like a life or death situation, you know, in that moment. Whereas, you know, for event coordinators, it's, you would think if you didn't really, you know, dive into it, or, you know, like we all know, like if you're not, you know, working in the industry, you would think it's the same, like, oh yeah, you have an event. And so, you know, the event is stressful while the event is happening. Right. But even if you look at it that way, you know, typically, and I don't know what the average is really, if you look at the whole world of events, but, you know, an event is, let's say, you know, 3 days or 5 days. And so it's like, you know, 3 to 5 days of that, you know, same acute stress that a lot of times we act like is also life and death, you know, life and death decisions, even though it's not, right? We apply that same level of stress, you know, to those situations,
that and is true,
the problems that we solve, and, you know, like putting the fires out, if you will. And so, but yeah, so it's, but it, but beyond that, as we all know, it's stressful. It's almost, you know, it's stressful every day, right? It's like, there's always something to deal with, you know, the, with clients or, you know, whatever state, you know, maybe it's internal stakeholders, whoever it is, right? There's always, it feels like there's always something, you know, always some problem that we have to solve, and we're problem solvers, right? Like that is, you know, that is what we're good at. Right. And so, you know, how we improve, you know, how do we make it less stressful? I think that there's, and that's, you know, maybe that's a whole other, you know, topic too for, actually I'll recommend that you interview one of my friends. Her name is Holly Duckworth.
Okay,
and she, you know, she speaks about mindfulness in leadership. So I think, I think folks, you know, folks like that in, you know, just helping us become more mindful and aware, you know, and present, you know, these are just, you know, small tactics that can help anybody, right, with stress. It's not necessarily, you know, relative to our, you know, the meetings industry.
Yeah, coordination and planning events is absolutely a stressful job. Event professionals, I guess, have a duty to deliver great experiences to the attendees, but they should also simultaneously take care of their health as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think that's, you know, that might be, again, that's something I think that for some reason we're missing, right, in trying to rush back to, you know, having events right now is, you know, in the, and it's maybe this is just a U.S. term because it's like a legal, like it's a legal term, but we call it duty of care, right? So you are like legally responsible to take care of the, you know, health and well-being of your attendees while they're at your event, right? And so this is where you can get yourself into trouble, you know, having, you know, and we were already starting to see things, you know, in the U.S. where large events, you would have, you know, an active shooter situation, right? There were already other situations, you know, before COVID that were starting to create, you know, just add, you know, add one more thing to be stressed out about, right? Like, you know, in having to, and of course, like you should have already had plans for all of the things that can go wrong, right? That is part of, you know, that's part of being a professional, you know, event organizer. But I think what's changed is, you know, the likelihood of some of these things happening, you know, we're starting to increase, right? Before it was kind of like, oh yeah, we've got plans for a fire and an earthquake and a hurricane and, you know, like these things. And depending on, right, you know, time, it may or may not be hurricane season or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Although, you know, who knows, again, even with climate change, like how these things, you know, are going to change. Like will the weather pattern, you know, seasons, you know, with hurricanes change, will they, you know, will they get worse? I think that, I think there's so many things now that our industry, there's so many things that we could be disrupted by again, right? Either on a large scale or just on a local scale, right? Depending on where you live. And so it's, you know, we need to get to a place where we can, you know, be more resilient and not just relying on one way of doing things.
Yeah. I also read somewhere, even planners must always be prepared that the event may not always go right. They should always be prepared for something that will go wrong or bad during the event.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the job. And honestly, I think that is why it's one of the most stressful jobs, right? Because that is literally, you know, the like main part of the job is just being prepared for everything that all could go wrong, even if it doesn't, right? Like you have to, you know, you have to prepare for it, and that's stressful. So yeah.
So what role and how impactful would virtual or hybrid events play? Should they contribute with regards to making it really lucrative as well as a delightful task to do?
Yeah, I mean, that really depends, right? So, you know, I think there's been a lot of debate, and I think it's still, you know, we're still playing with some different models with just the, yeah. you know, the virtual events. You know, do you charge for it or do you not, right? You know, and I think that there have been some successful scenarios where, you know, folks are charging for it. I think that if you're providing, you know, the education, the content, right, whatever it is that you would have provided at your conference physically, if you're providing those networking opportunities, and this is where there's really some, you know, some great technologies coming out where you can, even in a simple, you know, webinar scenario, yeah. you can add on a technology. Some of my friends have a company called, I think it's called Last Link. So, you know, I definitely recommend checking them out as well. It's just a technology you can add on to a simple webinar platform. Like if you're not using something like Hubilo that provides all of it, right? But I think that even what you guys are doing, you know, you've got all the components built in, right? So so it's all there to provide all of that value, if you will, that your attendee would have gotten from the, you know, from a physical conference. So why wouldn't they pay the same, you know, let's just say registration fee, keeping in mind that they're also saving all of the travel costs that they would have spent, right, in order to, you know, travel to that event. So it's still, they're still spending less money, but you're potentially making the same amount of money. But this is, you know, what's, I will say though, before COVID, my view on hybrid events is, so I, you know, conference, if you've got a large conference and, you know, you were not before doing like a hybrid element, right? You weren't, you know, broadcasting some of the sessions or recording sessions and that kind of thing. Really, you were, you know, there's two things, right? You were not protecting yourself from a major disruption, which is, you know, what we experienced. Yeah. So that you could just automatically, you know, flip that switch if you needed to, right? You didn't have the systems in place to go virtual in a short amount, you know, in a short period of time. Hmm. But also you weren't tapping into the, you know, the fact that you've got stakeholders, you know, potential customers, whatever it is, right, whoever you're trying to reach. There's so many of them who were unable to attend your event in person anyway, right? Yeah. And you're just missing out on this like enormous opportunity to reach all of these, you know, all of these people, right? Like, so to give you an example, I worked for an association and our members were teachers,
yeah.
right? So we had a pretty big conference. It was 20,000 people, right? So that's great, right? 20,000 of them would come to, you know, whatever city we were in. But they were like, you know, and it was international. They were coming from all over the world.
Yeah.
But I think the number was, I think in the US alone, there were like, there's something like, you know, 1 million teachers or something. Maybe it was 3 million, right? So if you think about it, that actually should have been our audience, right? Like, you know, we can reach potentially, you know, 1 million people, whereas, you know, our conference really can only, you know, 20,000 is getting up into the limits of what you can really achieve in a physical environment, right?
Yeah.
So you know, those pre-COVID, like those were good reasons to have that what we call a hybrid event, you know, a hybrid event, right? Where you're bringing people in person, but broadcasting or streaming some of the content, having, you know, systems in place where folks, whether they're virtual or they're in person, can connect with each other and providing that, you know, those networking opportunities as well. But the you know, you asked about making it lucrative. So where I was, my philosophy on this was a little different, was I felt like ideally, and granted, I realize not everyone has the budget for this, but that kind of goes back to, you know, are you using the right strategy if you can't afford to do it the right way?
Yeah.
But my, you know, my philosophy on it was that whole hybrid element, right? Reaching out to those folks who were remote, who could not attend in person, potentially that should be free for them to do, right? They're not there in person, so they're not paying, you know, for that experience. But you're, at the end of the day, you're reaching your stakeholders, whoever they are, right? Customers, employees, whatever they are. right? And so, you know, they should not, I think you're going to get a lot more reach if they don't have to pay for it. But really, you know, I guess there's, you know, there's a lot to it, right? Whether or not, you know, whether or not you charge for these things, but it shouldn't come down to whether or not, here's a simple answer. Whether or not you charge for your virtual event shouldn't come down to whether or not you need to make the money, right? It's whether or not somebody's going to pay that money, right? Like, is there enough value that they would pay for it and they would be happy to pay for it, right? Or is this actually, is your event, whether it's physical, virtual, hybrid, anything else, is your event actually just, you know, a tool in your toolbox where you're paying for that, you're losing money on it, but ultimately you gain that customer, right? Or you achieve that, you achieve whatever goal it is you're trying to achieve, and they achieve whatever goal they're trying to achieve, and everybody's happy, right? And so I think, you know, events largely should be seen as a cost, not a revenue generator, right? Because they should be in service to some other larger goal, right? Not, we're not just doing it just to do it and make money on it. I mean, unless that's literally your business model, in which case, you know, you're gonna have these huge disruptions like the one we're experiencing now.
Yeah, that's rightfully said. So I hope we all the companies, all the major product event technology companies are going to become hybrid in the coming post-COVID scenario. So like people are realizing the importance of reaching out to a much larger audience, which they were missing out before this the entire pandemic happened. So I hope in the coming few months or the coming next years, the events industry, they might create more great hybrid, amazing hybrid experiences and gain a large and like release a lot of informational and knowledgeable content for the audience that is waiting outside.
And I think, and let's keep, you know, I think we have been talking a lot about hybrid, you know, you and I, but a lot of people, right, in the industry have been talking a lot about how hybrid is the future. And, you know, the other day I was just thinking about, okay, but the reason that hybrid didn't take off 8 years ago was largely to do with the cost, right? Yeah. So largely it was because, you know, the cost of having the proper audiovisual equipment and, that's, you know, true, staff that can run that equipment, you know, that can really live stream your content in the way that we would expect it. That was just cost prohibitive for a lot of organizations, right? And so I really wonder, you know, in the last few, just the last few years, the last couple of years, we've really had some advances, you know, in things like, you know, Facebook Live and Instagram Live and some of these tools where you can live stream. Now, granted, obviously the quality may or may not be as good, again, depending on what kind of, you know, AV equipment and staff and everything you have running it. You know, if it's okay for your event to have that, you know, a little bit more of an organic feel, and it's like, oh, this is just, you know, somebody's streaming the keynote speaker from their smartphone, and for your event that works, right? Like, that's fine. You know, then I think in those scenarios, I think hybrid definitely is a potential for you, where you can gather folks in person and still reach out to, you know, those who can't be there or don't want to be there for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Right. There's attending an event in person isn't accessible for a lot of folks. And so I don't know, like, I'm starting to wonder about, you know, hybrid being the future. I actually think that we will continue to see a lot of virtual events, and, you know, even as physical events come back. I actually wonder if it will just be more of that balance. And I do, like, you know, there was folks around that time 8 years ago when we were talking about, you know, these virtual technologies and things when they kind of first came out. There was a group of, you know, people who were putting together an event called Event Camp. And one of the iterations that they did early on was this kind of, they called it like a hub and spoke model, right? And so so let's say you have a main, you know, at your headquarter office or something, like that's the main, you know, place where that physical event is happening. And then if you're able to, depending on who you're trying to reach and if this makes sense for you, mm-hmm. then you've got regional or local areas where people gather together, and then all of those different areas are connected virtually, right? So I really like that model as far, you know, if you're talking about hybrid mm-hmm. and that, you know, and that model works for you, I really like that. I really like that as well, because it also eliminates the need, you know, for folks to get on airplanes, you know, which is a cost to the climate as well.
Yeah, it's really a cost cutting, cost saving mm-hmm. technique. Let's see what future holds for the events industry.
Yep. Like I said, none of us know, you know, we think we're trying to create it, right? You know, we think we're trying to, you know, bring it back. You know, right now, but I think there's, you know, a lot of larger forces at play, and we need to remember that.
Yeah, definitely. So the last question for the day. So virtual tech is a villain for the lovers of in-person events. Would you call it a misconception or reality?
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, and that's what gets back to, we're trying to get ourselves back to work.
Yeah.
Right. You know, get, you know, restart, you know, the events industry, if you will, for those people that were relying on the in-person elements. Right. I mean, our industry is still moving. Right. People are still having events. You know, they've just, you know, the ones that were able to have just shifted to virtual. Right. And the companies that are able, you know, positioned to be able to take advantage of that, you know, have done so or are doing so. And so, you know, and during the last recession, when, you know, when virtual was quote unquote invented, right, when we started talking about virtual events, the, you know, the campaign at the time, you know, was that, you know, virtual will never replace face-to-face. And, you know, what's sad is that became our rallying cry, if you will, you know, for the industry.
Yeah.
And it was a way to, of course, you know, because our industry was affected by something completely different than a virus, right? It was affected by, you know, the negative press that certain companies were getting for having in-person events, you know, in tropical locations, right? They were having, you know, essentially companies that had received bailout funds from the US government were having incentive events, right? Which, you know, of course, with the right, you know, leadership could have been, you know, explained why that's important, like why that was still important for them to do. But instead it just got, you know, kind of dumbed down into saying, you know, and instead we just said that, you know, meetings mean business, right? Like that was the, you know, that's the organization that was kind of created out of that. And with the idea being that, you know, meetings are important for companies to have, right? Like, okay, great.
Yeah.
But what's missing here, right, is we're, you know, we're fighting a completely, you know, different battle in, you know, in a completely different country, if you will, right? Like if you just think about, you know, the forces that are impacting society right now in any country, mm-hmm. you know, the environment is completely different than it was at that time. Right. And so, you know, I think people are trying to resurrect that, you know, virtual will never replace face to face. But it's, you know, it's just, it's sad to me because clearly, well, and it's not, I guess it's not clear, right? It's not clear to everyone, but, you know, to me, I've been able to have very, you know, moving and transformational experiences through online events, right? Through virtual events. And not everyone has, right? And I appreciate that, right? Like, because again, it goes back to how are you designing it? You know, in the same way that you were just designing your physical event for folks to be sitting in a ballroom, staring at someone talking at them from a stage, right? How is that any different than me sitting in front of my computer, you know, just staring at someone talking to me, right? Well, it's not. So what people like to say is, oh, but the magic of the in-person event is that you're gonna, you know, run into somebody in the hallway, or you're gonna, you know, see somebody in the bar and strike a conversation with them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my answer to that is the same as, you know, before. Like you can do that online as well, mm-hmm. right? Like that can be done. It has been proven. Maybe it's a different skill set that not everybody has yet, because, you know, if you have not trained yourself how to do that over the last 10 years, if you've had the opportunity to do these kinds of things, you know, online networking and whatnot, you know, maybe it's just a, maybe it's just a new skill for you to learn, that, and now it's time to learn how to do that. But there are so many more, you know, benefits of, you know, virtual meetings, being more accessible, more inclusive, being able to reach so many more people, being less damaging to the climate, you know, the yeah. climate by not, you know, in particular, not, you know, not having that air travel, not setting up entire, you know, trade shows, you know, exhibits that just yeah. go into the trash, right, into the landfill. I think we're underestimating the society's perception of the industry and travel and the value that they get out of, you know, virtual or online events. And we're trying to say that, you know, it's not happening. And unfortunately, I think it is happening.
Yeah. That was like quite a tricky question though, because for many virtual events, because for many event professionals, virtual events are a sigh of relief as of now. But we have all reached, I guess we all have reached that webinar and online fatigue also, where people are missing that face-to-face conversations and old school in-person events. Willing or not, I believe it's for virtual events we are able to make through this pandemic right now together.
Yeah. And then, you know, again, that goes back to how you're designing that event, yeah. right? If somebody is just sitting in front of a screen and listening to one person talking with slides, like that's tiring, right? Like nobody, you know, if you're at an event and like, that's what it is all day long, right? It's just one person talking at you and it's slides. Like that's not engaging. That's not interactive. That's not energizing. And it's not in a physical environment either. Right. And so this is the perfect opportunity for us to really dig deep into what are the, you know, going back to that experience design, right? Learn what the skills and tactics are, you know, for designing experiences, whether they're in person or online, and realize you don't take for granted that just because an event is in person, that means that it's not fatiguing. Oh my God. Like I get exhausted after it, you know, attending a 3-day event, right? Like, right. But we like to talk about like Zoom fatigue. It's like, all right, well, you know, but also if I'm doing an in-person event, right, I'm exhausted, you know, granted, it's the travel doesn't help, right? You know, traveling and, you know, especially if there's time zone, you know, if you're traveling across time zones and things like that, like that can be, you know, you can be tired just when you show up.
Indeed, that is true.
Like before the event even starts, you know, you're tired. And then you've got, you know, it's early in the morning to late at night and there's drinking involved typically, you know, it's like, these are the things that, yeah. that, you know, make you tired. And so like, let's get real about what, you know, what are the goals and objectives for us, you know, hosting the event, for yeah. our attendees attending the event, like what, you know, what truly is the value for them? You know, how are you transforming their lives? Whether it's, you know, again, it doesn't matter whether it's physical or virtual, right? Just, you know, think through the best, you know, the best case scenario on, you know, how to do it.
Yeah. Thank you. It was quite an insightful podcast. And I really got to learn a lot about experience design and event integrity yeah. from you. That was quite yeah. exceptional. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Judy.
Thank you for taking time out. And it was really great to have you on Hubilo.
Thanks. Yeah, and I'm really excited about you know, what you guys are building too. So excited to yeah. see where that goes.
Yeah, definitely.